Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. Remember, we're a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields, and the goal of the program is to allow you, the listener, to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for you. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian, practicing for over 30 years, and the founder of Naturally Nutrition Incorporated. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. And remember that as a practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is Inflammation: What You Need to Know, What You Learn Could Save Your Life. And, of course, I'm going to remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. And you can also direct questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Blog Talk Radio. I think we're on Twitter now, and we're working on the LinkedIn connection. So you can get us. You can definitely reach us. And we do read all your comments, and we're enjoying the comments, and we're open to suggestions. That being said, we will be taking questions later on in the show. And at that time, I'll call out the last four digits of your telephone number. And if you are calling in with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for questions. All of that aside, let me tell you, we have a fabulous guest tonight. Her name is Susan Linke, and she is a registered and licensed dietitian and certified LEAP therapist. She received her MBA from Texas Tech University and a Master of Science degree in nutrition from Texas Women's University. She's also received extensive training in immunology, adverse food reactions, and practical application of dietary treatment for food-sensitive patients. Since introducing delayed type food hypersensitivity and testing and therapy into her private practice, she's seen firsthand how the proper identification of food and chemical triggers, followed by the implementation of a proven customized lifestyle eating and performance protocol, can help patients reduce inflammation and recover their health. Susan is considered one of the most experienced certified LEAP therapists in the country. She is actively involved in the training and mentoring of dietitians who are interested in applying this cutting-edge protocol into their practice, as well as presenting at the local, state, and national dietetic association conferences. She's a frequent lecturer in local, state, and national levels. She approaches nutrition and healthcare from an integrative and functional perspective, and this approach is firmly entrenched in the belief that the body has the capacity to heal itself if given the right tools and if underlying causes of the disease are addressed. Currently, Susan is the owner of Integrative and Functional Nutrition Private Practice in Dallas, Texas, in addition to counseling long-distance patients via Skype or telephone. She currently serves as the nominating team chair of the Dallas Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and holds various memberships in those types of associations. With that, let's bring Susan on. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Carol. Thanks for having me.
How
on
are you?
Show. Excited to be here. I'm doing great.
I'm very, very excited to have you here. You know, it's We've got a whole lot to talk about, and if you know those of you that are with us, you know that I usually start out with a bunch of statistics, and then I give you a reason as to why we're talking about what we're talking about. I'm just going to do this real quickly because we've got so much to talk about tonight, and we would be here for days if I talked about all of the statistics on these. So here it goes. The Center for Disease Control says that chronic diseases are responsible for 7 of 10 deaths each year and also responsible for treating most people with all kinds of conditions, which is why I'm not giving you statistics. And you'll know as soon as you hear these: heart disease, stroke, cancer, type 2 diabetes, obesity, arthritis, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, migraine, headache. All of these are the most common, costly, and preventable of all health problems. They're chronic diseases. That's where why we're talking about inflammation. That's why we're there's so much to talk about. Now you know why I can't give you all the statistics. But I will tell you this. Half of all American adults have at least one chronic condition, and almost one of these, one of three have multiple chronic conditions. And just as chronic diseases share many of the same causes, many of the same strategies and interventions can prevent them or lessen their severity, which is what we're going to talk about tonight. So that was pretty succinct, don't you think, Susan?
Yes.
That being said, though, yes, of course, the name of the show is inflammation. What you need to know, what you learn could save your life. However, we all talk about inflammation. Everybody's heard it, but does everyone understand what it is? And I'm just gonna give a little bit of a preface here in that it's important to remember that it is an immune response and it's a natural response. So that being said, Susan, can you give us just a little bit of an overview of how inflammation is looked at and how it's presented in the body and what it means to people, what it actually, just give them a good definition, a short and succinct kind of thing.
Sure. Inflammation is part of the body's immune response, and it's actually a good thing. Sometimes we think of inflammation as bad, but it's actually the way our body protects us. So, for example, if we get cut, we'll notice that we get red or swollen. That's actually part of the body's immune response to heal that hurt. The problem is sometimes whatever is bothering our immune system is not removed, whether it's a food that bothers us or maybe too much bad bacteria or whatever. And when that irritant to the immune system stays, then we end up with chronic inflammation long term, and that's when we get too much inflammation, and that starts to cause a lot of problems in our body.
So, All right, so inflammation is good and inflammation is bad. Is that what I could take
Correct.
From that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Short-term inflammation is good, inflammation is not good.
Okay. So, if how would I get to know, like, how would I know that it's becoming bad? How would somebody be able to maybe identify that on their own to say, hey, you know, I think something else is happening here? Is it something that are most of these symptoms things that we take for granted and we just don't think about, or is it like more of a excuse the pun here, but more of like a V8 on the head kind of, oh wow, I should have caught that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes inflammation begins slowly, and it becomes part of our normal. So we don't even stop to think that it's not normal anymore. Maybe digestive conditions. Maybe people have constipation for a long time, or loose stools for a long time, or maybe they have headaches every couple of weeks, or every week, or every other day, and they just treat that headache as normal. And so when you have repetitive problems over and over and over again, then very possibly it's something that's chronic.
Okay. So once it begins to become chronic, you know, everybody, let's just take migraine headache, okay? Everybody grabs the Tylenol, everybody grabs the Advil. Is that the right approach?
Well, in the short term, you definitely need relief from your symptoms, but you always want to try to think about why. Why am I getting chronic headaches? Why am I getting migraines? There's always a reason why. And unfortunately, our medical profession too quickly grabs for the pill bottle and treats the symptoms. But a lot of times when we have chronic inflammation, it won't necessarily stay in one part of the body. So if we don't put out that fire, it's going to spread, which is why some people have irritable bowel syndrome, and then they get arthritis, and then they get chronic headaches and things like that. So you've got, and the earlier that you fix it, the better. The longer you let it go, the harder it is going to be to tame it.
Okay, so when somebody has that those issues going on, you know, they're focused on getting rid of those particular symptoms. But as you just said, and as we both know, there's a series of symptoms that occur up to that particular chronic situation. So if we just backtrack a minute and we say, what kinds of things would people start to look at? Like for me, when I'm talking to people, I might tell them it could be itchiness of the skin that you're not paying attention to, a runny nose that happens on a daily basis. And, you know, would you not agree that it's the little things that we just kind of tend to overlook and just say, they're just little annoyances of life?
Correct. Our body is not designed to have a nasal drip every day, as you said. So anything that's chronic, the problem is sometimes we get used to those chronic things and we don't, we tend to think of them as normal. You know, a long time ago, I had a client, one of my very first migraine patients, and she literally had migraine headaches 24/7, unfortunately. And she asked me one time, How can people smile when their head hurts so much? And I just felt so sad, but that had become her normal. And people, you know, a lot of times people stand up and they have a stiff back and they just take that, well, I'm just getting old. But a lot of times the things that we think should be normal for getting old really are not. And so if something's just, you know, so I would just say, stop and think, what kinds of symptoms are you having every day, every other day, or every week? And you shouldn't be having runny noses or headaches or digestive symptoms or joint pain or chronic pain or anything like that. So if you have those things, that means that you've got inflammation going on. And sometimes it doesn't have to hurt. It can be cardiovascular disease or if you have Alzheimer's in the family, that's chronic inflammatory as well. And your inflammation can even affect mood and hormones. Hypothyroidism is very common, and that can be caused by an autoimmune condition. It means the immune system's attacking the body. So it's not always going to be pain, but any condition that's sort of chronic.
So those kinds of things where we are really, really good, and I think I want to make this point. We're all very, very, very good at saying, okay, you know, I've had this forever. It must have been something that I did, or it must be something that, you know, you're right, getting older, being a part of just your normal everyday events, oh, there's that pain again. So we are really good at overlooking those things. We're really good at brushing them off, and we want, you know, we want to alleviate it, and we want to get rid of these things, but at the same time, because it happens every day, we have a tendency to kind of compensate in our minds for having that. So I think the thing that one of the reasons I wanted to do this particular show is to teach people that it can be caught, this kind of thing can be caught early enough that some of these bigger issues can be avoided. And so when you do that, when you identify these kinds of things early on and you learn what those symptoms are, then it also triggers someone to become more in tune with their bodies and understand that, no, it's these things are not normal anymore, and it's a retraining. It really is a retraining.
You're right. So, it really is a retraining.
Yeah, because we've lived in a culture where, you know, we just take for granted that these things are going to happen, and it doesn't. It's not about that. So we could take any one of those things. We can take the thyroid conditions, we can take all of the things that we just talked about, we can pick them all apart, but yet we would be talking about the same kinds of things. So when we do that, we're talking about getting to the root of a chronic illness, right?
Right, absolutely.
And so do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. roughly 80% of our immune system is in our gut. So, and that's a good thing because that's where we eat. We consume foods, and foods are within our control. So one of the biggest influencers to our immune status is our diet, and that is something we can definitely control. The other nice thing about the immune system is that the cells in our gut regenerate every 3 to 5 days, roughly. So it's very conducive to healing.
Well, what is I just drew a blank. I'm sorry. Because the gut is so absolutely important. What is the biggest culprit to? I want to kind of break this out just a little bit more because people need to understand. Yes, the immune system starts in the gut. What does that really mean? Does that mean that my stomach has to be right on? Does it mean that, how do I keep it from not being right on? How do I keep it in a good position so that it can be as effective as it needs to be?
Well, prevention is real important, and that's probably the first thing to note. What are the things that get our gut unhappy to begin with? And probably the number one cause is antibiotics, because we have trillions of different bacterial cells that live in our bodies, and those bacterial cells influence our health. They actually, each bacterial cell has a genetic makeup, and they control our immune system as well. So when we get put on antibiotics and kill a lot of that bacteria, it sets us up for inflammation. So prevention is real important, and that is one thing people can do. For starters, if you do get sick, try to get well with natural remedies like garlic or vitamin C, or making sure vitamin D levels are where they need to be. Excuse me. And so if you can cold without taking an antibiotic, that would be the best thing to do. Do everything you can not to be placed on antibiotics. Obviously, in some conditions, you need them because it's life-saving and things like that. But if at all possible, don't run to the doctor every time you have a sniffle to get put on antibiotics, because it can take a long time to get that bacteria back to where it was. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're on a roll. I'm sorry. You go first.
That's okay. But if you do get put on an antibiotic, then take a probiotic to put that good bacteria that was killed back into the gut so that you don't end up with a gaping hole where you're lacking that good bacteria.
Well, and where I was going before, what I was about to say was, and I think it's real important for everyone to understand, because this is a retraining, because we are so conditioned to say, hey, you know what, when you're sick, if you got something really serious going on, take an antibiotic. And we don't think about anything else. We just want to kill everything that's in there and get rid of it. Now, what Susan just said, and Susan, please, if I don't get this right, you go for it. But what Susan just said was, hey, there's good bacteria in there, and we need to maintain that good bacteria. And you said a mouthful there where you said they each have their own DNA structures and they proliferate on their own, and that's because they live in our system for a reason. They live in our systems to be our defense mechanism because we're exposed to so many things. We're exposed to all kinds of outlying environmental factors that can cause havoc and play havoc on our bodies, in our bodies. And so that bacteria is there automatically right there fighting. It's kind of like they're the first line of defense that on the front line of defense. So if that's the case and we take antibiotics, we kill all of that. So what do we have to do? We have to put back those that bacteria in the form of a probiotic. That's why probiotics should be taken all the time with antibiotics. But here's the catch, Susan. Wouldn't you agree that when you're taking an antibiotic and then you take a probiotic with it, you're just going to kill off that probiotic? So there's a timing issue there, right?
Potentially, there's different points of view with that. Some people just say, well, take the antibiotic at one time of the day and take the probiotic at the other time of the day. So that's possible. But when you're finished taking the antibiotic, go ahead and keep taking the probiotic for 2-3 months after that so that you put that good bacteria back in.
Right. So all of that happens, and so there's a whole bunch of mechanisms that happen just to have our bodies do what it needs to do, our immune systems do what it needs to do, to keep us as healthy as possible. So what I'm going to ask Susan to do, because Susan's such an expert in food sensitivity and immunology, where do foods fit into this? Because the first thing that people do is they go, oh, you know what, I ate that spaghetti sauce yesterday, and I had a horrible reaction. I had either IBS or I had a migraine or something. I can't have that. Is that necessarily the case? Or, I mean, I noticed that, you know, I know for a fact that we're talking about delayed hypersensitivities. How delayed are they? What should people know? How minute could a reaction, could something be reactive? Let's pick it apart a little bit, and then let's kind of pull it back together as it relates to that gut mechanism so that people have a much better picture as to when something is ingested, what happens, why it's important, and then what needs to happen after that.
Mm-hmm. Those are all great questions. When somebody has food sensitivities, first of all, they're different than food allergies. Food allergies are what you look at a lot of times when the doctor pricks your back and looks for welts, or he may even do a blood test. But a lot of times when you have a food allergy, it'll affect the mucous membrane, so you may have hay fever type symptoms, or you may have welts or hives, or even an anaphylactic reaction if it's serious. When you have a food sensitivity, and food allergy reactions are typically pretty quick, sometimes seconds to minutes. When you have a food sensitivity, sometimes the reactions are delayed, can be delayed hours, could be delayed 3 or 4 days. That's why sometimes you may wake up from the night before and feel awful the next day. So, and that makes it really hard to pinpoint sometimes. And you can react to just about anything, a food or a chemical, anything except salt, baking soda, carbonated water, or white vinegar from an immune point of view. I had a client one time who had been itching for 3 years. The doctors couldn't figure it out. And it ended up being the vanilla in his Cooper Complete vitamins. So something so innocuous was causing him to itch really bad. So it can be something really small like pepper or vanilla or basil in something, or even some of the gums in the milks like the guar gum or the carrageenan, anything. And that's what makes it, even some medications have cornstarch. So, and that really kind of makes it difficult. But what happens when we react to a food, remember 80% of your immune system is in your gut. So when your gut and your immune system decide that a food is a foe instead of a friend, it'll produce these inflammatory chemicals called interleukins and cytokines and prostaglandins. They have all these funky names. And they get released from that gut area, and they travel anywhere in your body that blood flows, and they reach all target organs. So one person may eat garlic and get a headache because that's where the inflammatory chemicals went, or some person may eat a garlic and feel fatigued or moody. So everybody's reactions are going to be different, but the root is still at the immune system in the gut. So you, in order to figure out what foods they are, sometimes that's really hard because when somebody has food sensitivities, it's typically not one or two things. Sometimes it's dozens and dozens of foods when our immune system is compromised. And so you can keep a food diary and sometimes identify some of the things, but because a food can be so small and so delayed, sometimes a food diary is not good enough. So I use food sensitivity in my practice to help me figure out what foods people are reacting to.
Okay. So we'll talk about the food sensitivities in, testing in just a second, but I kind of want to make a couple of points. And before I make a couple of points on what you said, I want to just remind everybody you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, registered licensed dietitian, owner of Naturally Nutrition, and you can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight's show is Inflammation, What You Need to Know, What You Learn Could Save Your Life. We're talking with Susan Linke, one of the highest experts in the country on food sensitivity. You can find Susan at www.SusanLinke, and that's LINKE.com, where you will be taking questions. And the number to call in is 347-855-8894. I will be calling out the last four digits of your phone number. So if you do have a question, remember to press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions. Pretty soon we'll be taking some questions, so you might want to get in the queue anytime now. So that being said, just taking care of a little business there, Susan. That all being said, I wanted to kind of highlight what you just said before we talk about the food sensitivity testing. When you were talking about your patient that was itching for a few years and it turned out to be the vanilla in the vitamin, is that what you said, in a vitamin?
That's correct.
I always explain to people as well that it could be, I tell people that these sensitivities are delayed up to 3 or 4 days later. And if you can remember what you ate 3 to 4 days ago, great. But you also have to remember every single ingredient and how that breaks down into every minute additive as well. So it could very well be that you think you had spaghetti yesterday and that gave you a migraine today, when in fact it was 3 days ago when you popped a Skittle and it had yellow number 6 in it. And that yellow number 6 triggered a reaction, because then the next day you ate something else that had some other, maybe you took a pill that had yellow number 6 in it. And you're actually reacting to that as opposed to the spaghetti that you thought you ate, that you thought was the culprit yesterday. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes it's an additive effect too, which makes it even harder, because I like to say that the immune system is like a bucket. And, you know, our immune system is a finite amount of white blood cells, and it's meant to handle stress and our diet and a whole lot of other things. And when our immune system is overloaded, it just that's when we start having these chronic symptoms. And so if we eat a food one day that we have a reactivity to, in a small dose, maybe we have half a cup of strawberries and we might be fine. But the next day we have another half a cup of strawberries, and the third day we have another half a cup of strawberries. Well, maybe by the third day, that cumulative effect causes us to have that reaction the third time around. So we wonder why we're having strawberries one day and have diarrhea, but the first time we had the strawberries, we didn't seemingly have a problem. So that can make things really confusing.
Yeah, it really can, and it's something that everybody needs to understand, that it's almost impossible to track every single ingredient into everything that we ingest. Plus, it's not always about ingestion, right? It could be environmental and inhalation, right?
Oh, absolutely, and again, that's part of that immune system bucket. All of the things that that our immune system has to deal with, and environmental allergies are part of it. And the other thing that makes it identifying food sensitivities very difficult is that inflammation is not always felt. Cardiovascular disease has an inflammatory component, and you don't always feel inflammation there until it's too late. Things like multiple sclerosis have a big inflammatory component, and that's not something you feel until it's escalated to a certain point. Or even cancer, that has an inflammatory component too. So that is one of the pitfalls of trying to use a food diary. Yes, you'll identify some of your food sensitivities that way, but you'll never identify 100% of them because you don't always feel inflammation.
Okay, so now that's a great lead into, let's talk about the food sensitivity test for a minute, because I want to just explain that there is a test. I want you to explain the test. I want you to go through that. But then I also want to talk about the microbiomes a little bit, because I want everybody to be aware of that, because that's an up and coming term that most people haven't heard yet.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the food sensitivity testing that I use in my practice is called Mediator Release Test, or we call it MRT for short, and the dietary protocol that goes along with it is called LEAP. A lot of times a doctor will hand you test results, whether they be food allergies or food sensitivities, and he'll say, oh, look, you reacted to corn and rice and, you know, beans or whatever, so just don't eat your corn and rice and beans. The problem with that approach is, a typical grocery store has 42,000 items in it. We have 1,000 additives in our food supply. There's never going to be a test large enough that can identify everyone's reactive foods. So, removing 3 out of a potential 200 or 300 reactive foods will never get you 100% better. So we have changed the way we use the approach in order to compensate for that. So what we do with the food sensitivity testing is we try to find out what foods are safe for the person. And if the person is eating only their safe foods, then by default, they're going to be avoiding all of the untested reactive foods too. So in theory, we can avoid 100% of somebody's reactive foods if they're only eating their safe foods. And we do that for about 4 weeks, and that allows the immune system to take a big breath of relief because it's not being exposed to anything reactive. And usually if there's no exposure, then there's no reaction. And people start to feel better within just a matter of 7 to 10 days. We have significant a reduction in inflammation. Some people with eczema might notice a 70% improvement in 10 days. People with migraine are often migraine 10 days. People with diarrhea and IBS a lot of times are 50 to 80% better in just a week. We've even had people with Crohn's disease who in 2-3 weeks were able to start weaning off their steroids. It's very, very powerful, the whole immune system and the dietary effect of our foods.
And that being said, there's still work involved. The difference between a program like this and just going to a doctor and saying, give me relief, is the doc's going to give you a pill to hopefully relieve that migraine headache, but we're not really getting to the root cause of the problem. We're treating the symptom. In a situation like this, you will have to change some of the way that you're eating, and your lifestyle becomes a little bit different. And that means that's why Susan is a certified LEAP therapist. And so am I, by the way. Lifestyle,
yes,
eating.
Yes, you are, and a very good one, too.
Well, thank you, Susan. And Susan is my mentor, so I know how good she is. LEAP is Lifestyle, Eating, and Performance, LEAP. So it means that you will change your lifestyle, but you are doing the work. So I always tell people that when you have reached the point that you can no longer handle those migraines, when you can no longer handle that chronic itching, when you can no longer handle that chronic situation that you've been dealing with, then it's time to look at this, because at most of the time people are wanting that pill, they're wanting that immediate relief, and they're not really ready yet to make, and excuse the pun here, but it works, to make the leap, to change the lifestyle, to get the results, and to get to the root cause. So think about that. Think about it seriously, because if you're out there with severe chronic conditions that you just don't know what to do with anymore, and you're just sick of those pills, this really does work. And as Susan said, we see relief all the time for things that most people have been battling for years and years and years and years. And we get really good results in a very short period of time. And I don't know, Susan, but that 10-day mark, it's phenomenal, because people are just, they're like brand new people at that 10th day. And it's not because they're done with that program. So I want to make that real clear. It's not because they're done with that program. It's because they've been able to calm that immune system down, and that immune system doesn't have to work constantly, because that's the other thing that happens with a chronic condition. Your immune system is on high alert all day long, every single day, because you're ingesting or you're exposed to triggers every single day. And when you eliminate those triggers, like Susan said, then your immune system says, hey, it's like an aha moment for your immune system, and it says, hey, you know what? I can calm down now, and I don't have to, I can take a break. And then all of a sudden, your body is like, wow, I feel a whole lot better. I know this because I've gone through it. I continue to go through it. And I think I've mentioned on this program a number of times where I had fibromyalgia. I don't have it anymore. Susan, you worked with me years ago. And mm-hmm. I have yet, knock on wood, to have any of those symptoms back. So, you know, it does work. So all that being said, I want to wrap this into the microbiomes. And can we, let's kind of go back to inflammation again. Let's just recap real quickly what inflammation is. Let's bring in the microbiomes, and then let's talk about food sensitivity and how all of this works together, okay?
Mm-hmm. So the microbiome we have inside of us, we're actually a host. We are host to thousands and thousands of different species of bacteria, and all of those bacteria also have a genetic makeup. So it's not like when we take antibiotics that we're just killing bugs, like bugs running around. You know, those bugs have a genetic makeup, and that's really important to know, because that genetic makeup means that those bacteria actually have a function in our body, and each species has a different function. They help produce hormones in our body. They help detoxify our body. They actually produce vitamins in our body that we need. So when we eat, we feed the bacteria, and they in turn have a function that benefits us. So when we take an antibiotic, it's not just a matter of killing bugs. We're actually killing genetic material that was supposed to benefit us. So it is really important to get that gut back to normal, because otherwise we not only kill the bugs, the good ones, but we also kill their function. So no longer are we, that's why when we get sick and take antibiotics, if we don't do something to get that gut back in shape, we'll end up with hormonal issues, we'll end up with inflammation, we'll end up with vitamin deficiencies, because we're killing the bacteria that help our bodies function and have all those processes.
Okay. So all that being said, and it being related to inflammation, do you feel like we made the connection between microbiomes and inflammation?
Well, they do know that, yes, the bacteria also are the bacteria line the gut. Our gut is a fortress. If you think about it, our gut is almost, you could say it's on the outside of our body, because nothing gets in our body truly until it passes through the gut lining. And so our gut has a variety of mechanisms that protect us from the outside world. We have mucus in there. We have bacteria that help fight off some of the pathogenic bacteria. So they're part of that. They're part of that defense system, and they know when people have inflammatory bowel disease that the amount of bacteria in those people's guts are much lower. So the bacteria are part of that defense system, and along with the mucus and along with the intestinal barrier. So there's a physical barrier there too. So that bacteria is just part of that defense system. So when that defense system is broken, then the pathogens from the outside world have an easier access into our bloodstream to promote inflammation.
I think what you need to do, Susan, is talk a little bit about the microbiome process and what they're finding at the time of birth, so that we can tie this into the inflammatory process later on in life, as you just said, and let people really understand that everything does come together and it goes full circle with everything to which we're exposed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I will, the disclaimer I want to say is this is a very new topic that's being researched heavily right now. And I'm preparing a PowerPoint presentation actually for a conference, and it's been a little difficult because there's so much information coming out that as soon as I say something, there's a new piece of research that may say something a little bit differently. So
okay.
the general concept is still the same. For example, one thing that's changed is they used to think that the GI tract of a newborn infant was sterile, and that's still most of the literature I read will say that the GI system of an infant is sterile at birth. But now they're finding that that not so, that the bacteria actually pass through the placenta to the baby, and they look at the meconium, which is the stool of a fetus, and that has bacteria in it. But we get most of the bacteria when the baby is born. It does get bathed with bacteria from the mother's vagina, and that bacteria is lactobacillus. When someone is born via C-section, they actually get a completely different bacteria, and that's the bacteria that we have on our skin because it's coming through the skin. So those babies are born with Staphylococcus as the main bacteria. So even from birth, it's very important, if at all possible, to choose a vaginal delivery. And if not, at least know that the baby that's being born C-section doesn't have the same type of bacteria. So you could give a newborn baby even, you can start to give them probiotics. They do sell probiotics for newborns. So just knowing that, and the second line of defense for a newborn baby is its mother's breast milk. So if your baby is born via C-section, at least try to choose to breastfeed. And again, if not, look at giving the baby some antibiotics. You know, I know not everybody has the ability to breastfeed, and not everybody has the ability to give a vaginal birth, but at least know that there are some things that should be done to correct that, if at all possible.
Okay, and thank you for that, because first of all, thank you for the disclaimer on how new this is, and I really just kind of wanted to scratch the surface a little bit, let people hear it, so that when they start to hear it out there, they go, oh, I already heard that. That's good. I understand it a little bit better. And that's what this program is about. So thank you for that. Now, as it relates to, and the reason I wanted you to go through the birth situation and the bacterial flora, the bacteria for birth, like the lactobacillus versus the staph, the issue then is later on in life, as that inflammation happens chronically, then, you know, could some of this be related back? Now, I know this research is all new, but I'm sure that's one of the biggest questions. So if that's the case, and we know that we have to look at supplementing the acidophilus or the probiotics when somebody has an antibiotic, it would stand to reason that we should always treat our guts with the respect that they deserve. And now I think our awareness, based on what we've talked about tonight, our awareness is heightened by virtue of knowing that our immune system absolutely thrives with a healthy gut. So that all being said, then we can limit that inflammatory response and then kind of hopefully thwart off some of these chronic issues. Would you not agree?
Oh, absolutely. Prevention is definitely the best thing that we can do.
And given that, I mean, if you're not going to do food sensitivities or you can't always do food sensitivities right away, then remember that it's important to give your gut some things that it needs. You know, do the probiotics, do the vitamin C, do the vitamin D, get your vitamin D tested so that your levels are up. Anything else, Susan, I should add?
Well, for our program from the Functional Medicine, the Institute of Functional Medicine, and that the 4R program talks about removing, replacing, reinoculating, and repairing. And that is a good model when somebody has chronic illness. And the first step, the removing, is when you remove food sensitivities. You remove the toxins. You remove the irritants. It's like if you scrape your knee, you're not going to put salve on it right away. You want to clean it first, right? Because your immune system will have a hard time healing that wound if it still has dirt. So the first thing is to get out the irritants from our immune system, and the fastest way to do it is to get rid of those food sensitivities or any other irritants. And then you replace it, help your gut start functioning better with digestive enzymes, or some people have low stomach acid, and then you re-inoculate with the good bacteria. And then the fourth R in that 4R model is to repair. So some people need nutrients. There's some things like zinc that helps close that leaky gut. Butyrate helps close that leaky gut. The good bacteria also help close that leaky gut. So the 4R model, the remove, the replace, the reinoculate, and the repair, are really good. It's a really good model for keeping us healthy.
Okay, cool. We have a couple questions. I want to do this one blog question first, because we had a blog question come through, and it says, I'm a 52-year-old, and I feel like I'm falling apart. My wife is very good at making me eat well and healthy, but in the last 6 years, I've had back surgery that didn't work, and so I live in pain, a stomach ulcer that started with GERD, and I had my gallbladder removed, and now I'm facing a cardiac cath with possible pending surgery. What could I have done differently, if anything, so I can possibly avoid other things in the future? That's a pretty powerful question.
It is a powerful question, but you can kind of see the cascade of event thing has led to the other. And the first thing that probably started it was the surgery. And a lot of times when we have a traumatic event to the body has a hard time recovering. A lot of times when we have surgery, we also get put on antibiotics, so the surgery will affect the gut that way too. And then he developed the reflux. And sometimes reflux is actually caused by too little gut bacteria. And so the doctors then on top of that will give you a supplement to help control stomach acid, and we need stomach acid. Stomach acid helps us digest. It helps prevent us from getting a bacteria called H. pylori. And so then the H. pylori contributes to ulcers. So this particular blogger said he had GERD and then he had the ulcer. So he probably has some H. pylori bacteria in there. So some of that, you know, and a lot of that can be caused by food sensitivities too. Food sensitivities can manifest in many, many ways, and that is one way. And then the gallbladder issue, there's a doctor in the 60s named Dr. James Brenneman who said that most cases of gallbladder inflammation is really related to food allergies or food sensitivities.
Wow. So what could he have done differently, or what can he do differently to possibly avoid other things? That's the last part of that question.
Well, it's putting out the fire, because this person's immune system is on fire, and it's just manifesting in different ways. So the easiest thing to do is always food. It's the least invasive, and it's the most powerful, because it's what comes in direct contact with our immune system. So from my experience, and I know with yours too, Carol, the easiest thing to do is always to test for food sensitivities, remove all those foods that are causing inflammation, and then start to repair that gut.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I read that question because it really did just show the cascade of events that we're talking about. It just kind of wraps up everything that we're talking about tonight. So thank you for the question. Thank you for sharing that with us, and I hope that helped. So we're going to go to the phones, and we're going to do caller 2205. 2205, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, so I kind of have a question about probiotics, because, I mean, you go to the stores and they have hundreds of different kinds of probiotics, different brands. Some say they have 5 million live active cultures in it, and others say they have whatever. And how do you know going into it, okay, this is the one that I should be buying? And also, should you be taking a pill, or is it better to get it from stuff like yogurt? Or I know there's also another type of yogurt drink called kefir that is, you know, on the label it says that it's a probiotic as well. I mean, have you experienced, like, what works best, or if they all just, it all just depends on the person, or are you understanding what I'm saying?
I understand where you're coming from. I mean, it's kind of like a plethora of different things.
Yeah, there's so many different things out there. What do you recommend that you should, you go for the pill, or should you go for the yogurt? The natural food.
that is, first I'll say that, like Carol said at the beginning of the show, it's kind of hard to give some advice without knowing that person's particular condition. And some people have too much bad bacteria. They have a condition called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And sometimes you don't want to put in bacteria too soon, because you still end up with too much bacteria, too much of the bad, and even too much of the good, and people end up with a lot of bloating. So it'd be a really good idea if you could find a good integrative and functional dietitian or nutritionist or physician to work with to answer your particular question. But just in general, there's a lot of study being done on probiotics, and that is continuing. So there's still a lot we don't know. In general, for my clients, I typically suggest more of a shotgun approach, where where we try to get as many different strains as we possibly can. And I always try to start really low with the dose and then work up, because sometimes when you start off with a big bang, you can kind of have a, if it's not going to sit well with you, you might end up with a lot of bloating or cramping or things like that. So the body doesn't like shocks. Usually gradual is much better. So that's typically, so that's kind of a general answer. But fermented foods are very good, like the kefir, like you said, or fermented foods, so sauerkraut or pickles or things like that, and that will help the bacteria in our gut to grow. So, and as far as the yogurt, yeah, yogurt's good if it has live cultures. Some yogurts are not very good. They're very processed. So, yeah, so a natural yogurt, you can make your own yogurt. If you don't tolerate milk, you can make kefir from even coconut, for example. So there's a lot of different ways to make that yogurt.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Susan, let's just touch a little bit on what you said, where the fermented foods. When you talk about fermented foods, you mentioned pickles. You want to tell everybody why that's why fermented foods help?
Well, they help your body. It helps create an environment where the bacteria in our gut can grow. And hopefully, you know, again, we've got thousands of different potential strains. I even saw one article that said we have 35 different strains of bacteria potentially. I'm sure that number will change next week. So taking, you know, choosing a specific strain in a bottle is all we can do right now. But if we can help the bacteria in our gut to regenerate on its own, by creating that environment, then that's the best thing we can do. And actually, one thing we haven't talked about in the future is fecal matter transplants. And fecal matter transplant is where they take the fecal matter from a healthy donor and they put it into someone that's really sick. And that's probably, I am so excited about that. They're doing it right now for C. diff. They're looking at approving it for inflammatory bowel disease. They do it in other countries. I had a client the other day whose child had had C. diff for 7 months, and they just could not get it out of, in control. And he got a fecal matter transplant, and within a week, was doing fantastic. So that therapy in the future is right now for C. diff, but even in the future, I think it's going to be really, really, I think it's going to turn some health around big time.
Well, and I have to agree with that. I had a client that had C. diff for over a year, and over a year, suffered with it greatly, and just nothing worked, and ended up doing the fecal transplant, and was cleared within a month. So
yeah,
it really does work. It may not sound like the prettiest thing to do, to take some fecal matter from a healthy donor and put it into somebody that's not so healthy, but if it works, and it has worked, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting to know that it can work. Just to recap a little bit, Susan, if there was, five things you wanted to say to somebody just on the top of your head to keep their immune systems healthy, to keep that inflammatory response down, what would be the five things that you would say before we get off the air tonight?
First thing I would say is they know that Western diet really affects the immune system adversely. So eat as healthy as you can. Eat as close to nature as possible. If you have a loaf of bread that could sit on your counter for 5 months and not grow stale, and roaches won't even eat it, that's not the way we need to be eating. So Try to eat fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. Those things naturally produce enzymes, and those enzymes help us digest that food. So eat as close to nature as possible, healthy fats and things like that. If at all possible, don't get put on antibiotics. I have 3 grandkids. The oldest one is 4, a 2, and a 6-month-old. They've never been on antibiotics. They've gone to the doctor, and they've asked the doctor, could we get by with just waiting for the antibiotic? Let's see if the child gets better. And I have. So we've been able to avoid, thankfully, probiotics. But if you do get put on antibiotics, then really look into getting a probiotic to replace that good bacteria. And then exercise and rest. We know that stress really does impact the immune system adversely. And then exercise.
Great. Susan, do you want to give your website out again?
Yeah, thank you, Carol. It's www.susanlinke.com.
Great. Wonderful. Susan, you've been fabulous. Thank you. You can find us at naturallynutritioninc.com. You can find us on Facebook with The Whole Scoop, The Whole Scoop Radio. Please give us comments. Please give us some suggestions on what you'd like to hear. We're going to be doing some fabulous shows coming up. We've got one on energy healing coming up in the next couple of weeks. We've got we're going to be revisiting the whole caretaker situation that we talked about last year. We're following up with that. We've got some really cool shows. We're going to even be talking about urinary incontinence, about some of those things that are happening with people that you don't like to talk about, but the things that you can do to kind of prevent it, because those are things that we all need to prevent. So just let us know what you'd like to hear. These shows are about what you've told us you wanted to listen to. So thank you so very much for listening, for your questions. Remember to tell everybody they can archive this show. Susan, would love to have you back. As usual, you're a wonderful, wonderful guest. You're a plethora of information, and everybody should check out Susan's website. She's got a lot of good things to say. She's fabulous. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Carol, for having me.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, and we're going to say goodnight for now. We'll see you again on March 10th. Good night.